Just before I start, you've got this little leaflet here, and you've got the reading on the back. And if you flip it around, you've also got a short outline of where I'm going, just so you don't get lost. Okay. But as I begin, I'm so aware that this topic is a massively topical and contentious one. According to the census that took place in 2001, there are approximately 1.5 billion Muslims in this world. There are approximately 900 million Hindus, roughly 400 million Buddhists, 14 million Jews, and many more millions of people who believe and put their trust in some other religion. Closer to home, here in London, our own city, according to that same census, 7% of the population of our city are Muslim. That's about 600,000 people. Again, this is in 2001, so we've had 8 years between then and now. There are over 300,000 Hindus and over 150,000 Jews. And the other aspect is that it's a personal one too. So each of us, you and I, will work with, live with, know, play sport with, whatever you do, a very kind, friendly and sincere Muslim, Jew, Sikh or Hindu. And so this naturally raises a question. Is Jesus Christ merely one way among many equally valid truths or ways to God? Or is he in fact the only way? It's the natural question, really. And we find Jesus' own answer to this question here in our passage tonight in John 14. So do keep your eyes on it. But notice first that it's not on the lips of a fundamentalist preacher preaching whatever, but it's on the lips of arguably the most loving and kind man that ever walked the planet. Look down with me at verse 6. That's the first one. Verse 6. Thomas is here, and Thomas is someone I think we can probably all relate to. Okay, and he asks, Jesus, how can we know the way? So in other words, among all these competing theories, all these competing ideas for what's true, how can we know what the truth is? And Jesus' response is both exclusive and it's personal at the same time. Look down at verse 6. Jesus answered, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. Even in Jesus' lifetime, this idea of having the sole valid truth was just as unpopular as it was and is today. Over the years, people have branded it religious chauvinism, outdated, obnoxious, arrogant. Yet this claim is absolutely fundamental to being a Christian. I've got two main points for this evening, and you can find them on the front or back, whichever way you're looking at it. But the first one is that it's impossible that all religions all be true. George Bernard Shaw is quoted as once saying, there's only one ultimate world religion, simply many versions. Okay, another way of looking at it, there's a picture of a big mountain. And at the top of this mountain, you've got one ultimate being. And the different cultural interpretations of that being are merely the different routes up that mountain. And it doesn't really matter how you get up that mountain. It's only really a question of whether you follow that route sincerely or devoutly. But if you spoke with someone from each of these faiths, is that really what each one of those would say? I studied French at university, and during my course, I spent a year living in Paris. And there I met numerous Muslims. I spent time with a good 5 or 6 Muslims regularly. And we'd spend most of our time just speaking about what we believed to be true. And they would say to me, Simon, I can respect Jesus. I can respect him as a great man and a great prophet, but he certainly wasn't God, and his death on the cross was not accurate. And yet these are all central and absolutely necessary to me in what I believe as a Christian. And I would say to them, you need to give up that Muhammad was God's ultimate prophet. And they'd say, whoa, whoa. And so for each of us, we could debate and we go back and forwards. They love to talk for hours, which is wonderful. I really enjoyed it. And we'd always remain friendly. No blows were exchanged. But yet, Never mind different routes up the same mountain. We're in fundamentally different mountain ranges. And so in our pluralistic society, pluralism says we're all right. We're all right. We'll all get to the same destination in the end. But even the pluralist is actually a victim of his own ideology. You see, it's often said that pluralism says absolute truth claims are against the rules. But you'll notice that that is, in fact, an absolute truth claim itself. And in saying that, it denies each and every other truth claim of every other world religion. So you see, it's just impossible that all religions all be true. One Indian philosopher once said, "World religions are superficially different, but fundamentally the same." But it's actually the exact opposite. They are superficially similar, but fundamentally different. You see, if you ask the question, what is God like? The Buddhist would say, there is no God. The Hindu, God has millions of faces. We saw it on the video there. God has millions of faces. The Muslim, the Christian, and the Jew would say, there is only one God. Can all these be equally true? No. And so we see that they're absolutely fundamentally different. Ask another question. Ask the question, who was Jesus? And again, the Muslim would say he was a sinless prophet. The Jew, he was a prophet or a heretic, depending on which branch you asked. The atheist, yeah, Jesus, he was a good man, a good example of how to live. But only the Christian would say he is God himself on earth. Again, can all these claims be simultaneously true? Can it be true for you guys and not true for me? And when you ask someone who is Jesus, you're not simply asking them for their opinion. Instead, you're asking them to tell you something definite about history. And we can't all be right, can we? And so who was Jesus in reality? Who was Jesus in history? We can't simply reject him out of hand, but instead we need to look at evidence. Is Jesus worthy of being able to say down on your sheets, I am the way, I am the truth, and I am the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. Is he worthy of that kind of certainty? Think about it. And so secondly tonight, I want to look at the evidence behind Jesus' claims, the evidence behind Jesus as an individual. And as I do so, I want you guys to ask yourselves questions as well. Are Christians right to worship Jesus as God? Are they right? Is Jesus worthy of his claim in John 14 here? And is this claim in fact right? Or is it not? There has to be a definite answer. As we approach the evidence of Jesus, I want to begin by remembering that Christianity was born, kind of grew out of Judaism. Okay, it grew out of Judaism. And the Old Testament ends with the Jewish people waiting for God himself to come to earth. If you read the last couple of chapters of the Old Testament, you see this anticipation. They're waiting for God himself to come to earth. And then Jesus arrives. And there's this bloke called John the Baptist. And he points at Jesus and he says, that man is God. And the amazing thing is that Jesus doesn't laugh it off. He doesn't correct John. He doesn't say, oh, it's a stupid idea, preposterous, I'm just a man. But actually he says, John is right. And throughout Jesus' whole life, the question of his identity was at the very forefront. Everything he did, everything he said, every action and every word was watched closely and scrutinized. And I want to look at three aspects of Jesus that reveal his identity, or at least give us a clue as to his identity. And you can see those again down on your sheet under the subheading, the evidence is for Jesus' claims. But firstly, his God-like character. The poet laureate, Lord Tennyson, I don't know if any of you are history or English scholars, but he once said Jesus' greatest miracle was his character. And Bertrand Russell once said, if we were all like Christ, if we were all like Christ, this world would be paradise. And no matter how hard you look at Jesus, no matter how closely you scrutinize him, you simply cannot find any fault with him. And as I personally have read the Gospels, as I've read Matthew, Mark, Luke and John, all written by his close friends, I discover someone who is everything that I should be, and yet I'm not. Despite such huge claims, he was so incredibly humble. Washing his disciples' feet at one point, gets down, takes a towel and washes his disciples' feet. Something that in that time and era, only a slave would do. He was so full of compassion. At one point, he reaches out his hand and he touches a leper. Now, the lepers were forced to live outside the town. They were far too unclean, and obviously because of their condition, they were excluded from absolutely everybody. And yet he reaches out, he touches this man, and he heals him. And his life also spoke of a person that was absolutely consistent. He didn't just preach and then do something completely different. No, he lived exactly what he taught. And Jesus' closest friends, I've just spoken about them, his closest friends wrote about him that he never did or said anything wrong. Think about your closest friend. Perhaps it's your wife or your husband or your roommate or your brother. Whoever it is, think about them. Could you say the same thing of them? Could they say the same thing of you? And so secondly, Jesus' claims. In the company of his disciples and other Jews who listened to him, Jesus claimed that the whole of Jewish scripture spoke about him, that it was written about him. God had been speaking for over 1,000 years to his people, and yet Jesus comes along and he says, yep, all of that, it was about me. It is about me. And he also claimed that he had free access to God as well. Look down at either your Bibles if you've got them open, or at the handout that you've got. Flip it over. John 14, the top one, verse 7. Jesus says, if you know me, you know God as well. And Philip, if you look down at verse 8, he still isn't sure. And he says, look, Jesus, show us the Father and that'll be enough, all right? But Jesus says, if you have seen me, you've seen God. You see, Jesus is saying, if you want to know God, look at me. If you want to meet God, come and meet me. And if you want to hear God, come and listen to me. Such enormous claims, huge claims. And any one of us, just like Elizabeth was saying before, any one of us can claim to be the King of England. Any one of us can claim to be God and have free access to God. But it's just the rest of us would laugh at them. We'd say, what? You have to be kidding. We'd simply dismiss that person as absolutely crazy. But those people who met Jesus, those people who walked with him day by day and who met him and who talked with him and who kind of listened to him, the difference was they believed him. I wonder if you ever asked yourself why. Why did they believe him? And it wasn't only because of his character, but it was also because of his conduct, the way he lived. And so thirdly, his godlike conduct. In the Old Testament, we see God as the creator. So God creates everything. In the New Testament, Jesus' friends write about him in a storm. And they say, you know, Jesus stood up in front of a storm and he spoke to it. And in an instant, it went quiet. And do you know what they said? Who is this man? Who is this man that even wind and even the waves obey him? In the Old Testament, God fed people miraculously. And here in the New Testament, Jesus takes a packed lunch of a small boy and he feeds 5,000 families. In the Old Testament, God is in charge of death. Here in the New Testament, Jesus walks up to the tomb of his friend. a guy called Lazarus. Lazarus has been dead for 4 days. And Jesus walks up to it. He speaks to Lazarus. And Lazarus walks out alive. What Jesus did didn't reveal his claims to be the ludicrous claims of a madman. But instead, they backed up his claims 100%. But it was all too much for the Jews. And offense turned to hatred, and hatred turned to execution. And so Jesus was killed, and his followers just scattered. And so lastly, the ultimate proof of Jesus' identity, his resurrection. He's been killed on a cross just 3 days earlier. And here in John, we have the account of Thomas. This is a second reading that we had read. After his friends saw Jesus alive, Peter, John, they went to the tomb. Do you remember the two Marys also went there as well? And they saw him. And then Jesus came and appeared to the whole of them collectively. Only Thomas was missing. And so when they went back to Thomas and they said, "We've seen Jesus alive." Thomas, quite understandably, and I think Thomas is brilliant because he's someone we can all relate to. And he quite understandably says, "Ha, guys, I'm not stupid. Dead people do not come back to life. If I'm ever going to believe, I will need absolutely conclusive proof. I will need to see and touch Jesus' wounds myself." And so 1 week later, and here you have it, chapter 20, verse 26. They were all together again. Thomas was there too, this time. And then Jesus appears and he says to Thomas, "Go on, Thomas, look at the evidence. Touch my hands. Put your fingers where the nails were. You can even shove your hand right up into my side where they put the spear, where they shoved the spear to ensure that I was dead." And the cynic, confronted by the evidence, becomes a believer. And he confesses, and it's an amazing transformation. "My Lord and my God." And Jesus accepts this as worship. He doesn't kind of put Thomas down and say, no, don't say that. He takes this, "My Lord and my God." And remember that the disciples were Jews. They believed that there was one God. And yet here they are worshipping Jesus as God, a man. If you're a first century believing Jew, you don't take God's names, names reserved for centuries, for referring to the one true God. Names, some of them so sacred you couldn't even whisper them. You couldn't even say them out loud. You don't take those names and then apply them to your mate, your friend. But that's what they did. That's precisely what they did. Let me say, as Christians, we're not into looking at other faiths and saying, "We're better than you." Or the kind of argument that says, "Our God is better and bigger than yours." But we do say that Jesus' life, his death and his resurrection prove his own claims to be the only way to God. The one person who reveals the truth about God. And the only giver of life, of the life of God. And so, Islam, which denies Jesus on earth, denies him to be God on earth, if we to believe Jesus, it's wrong. Buddhism, which has an eightfold path to enlightenment, if we're to believe Jesus, merely a dead end. You see, the evidence of history vindicates Jesus' claims. If you've come here tonight, I want to close soon, but if you've come here tonight, an agnostic like Thomas, that's someone who hasn't quite made up their mind, who doesn't know which way to go, then be aware that as you come face to face with Jesus, just as Thomas did, you can't remain an agnostic for very long. You see, you're confronted by a real person in history who made such huge claims and backed them up conclusively by what he did and by what he said. And you need to make a decision about him yourself. You see, you've got to either join with Thomas in his confession of Jesus, where he says, "My Lord and my God," or you reject Jesus' claim and you continue to live with something else or someone else at the center of your life. We've all got to investigate. We've all got to ask ourselves a question, who was this man? You can't simply just walk out these doors and say, it's a load of rubbish. If someone's made those kind of claims, investigate it. Can I recommend, there are a couple of copies of John's Gospel at the back. Take them away and read them. And as you do so, ask yourself, who is this man? Does this man, what he says and what he does, tally with these claims? Ask yourself the question, if I don't worship Jesus, why not? Is there a good reason from keeping me from worshiping him? H.G. Wells said, I'm not a believer, but this penniless preacher from Galilee is irresistibly the center of history. And so, what will you make of Jesus? And I want to leave with just a final thought. On one level, you might think tonight has been incredibly negative. Other religions, if we're to believe Jesus, do not lead to God. They can't. But the message of John 14, 6 is absolutely wonderful. The positive truth that Jesus does lead to God. He reveals the real truth about God. And this isn't merely wonderful conceptually and philosophically and whatever else, but it's also wonderful personally and experientially. If you're a Christian, you get to be friends with God. You get to be mates with him. You get to hang out with him. You get to be part of his family and hang with him daily. And let me tell you from my personal experience, there is nothing more fulfilling in the whole of life, in the whole of the universe, than being a follower of Jesus. And it could all be yours if only you'll come to Jesus under his terms.